What it is, I think the best way to explain it is that the paper market has now become completely divorced from the underlying price and value, if you like, of bullion. And since nobody is really in there challenging it, you can make what you like. You can call silver 120, 60, I don't know, anything you like. Because there's nobody in there actually saying, "I've got to buy this." I mean, they've marked it down so cheap and all the rest of it. So that's the basic answer. I think there is another answer too, and that is that we're coming up to the first quarter, March 31st, and the bullion banks have a problem. I mean, so what this means, Andy, is that the inflation rate, which nobody was really looking for, is going to be through the roof later on this year. Okay, what does that do to bond yields? Well, they could be through the roof as well. So that's what's going on. And I mean, I can just imagine that on Monday morning at 6 o'clock in the morning, they were shaking Trump awake saying, "Taco, for God's sake, taco." I think the answer is the latter. That's the mandate. That's his mandate. And, to hell with the inflationary consequences. In other words, you're going to find that the value of credit or the other side of credit, debt, is going to get wiped out. It either gets wiped out by businesses and banks going bust, or it gets wiped out by the, if you like, the currency in which you value this debt being depreciated right down to whatever is necessary. And that's going to be the choice. And I'm absolutely clear in my own mind, it is the political imperative which will win. And that is sacrifice the dollar, don't sacrifice businesses.
Alistair MacLeod, good afternoon to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Andy.
It's really good to see you. It's been a little bit of a while. It's been a good 4 or 5 months since I last had you on, and it's an interesting time. The metal prices had, I want to say, both gold and silver have had the worst week in 40 years. Wanted to know your thoughts on that. Is this just really based on this just massive run-up that we had leading up to this, which was probably the best time in the history that I'm concerned. But yeah, talk to me about this correction here. And is this a pop, or what is this?
Well, it's something we've never really seen before. The amazing thing, Andy, is that the speculators are not in there. I mean, if you look at open interest on COMEX, in
That's a great
silver,
point.
we've been hitting over 20-year lows in open interest. Is that a contract full of speculators? No, it's not. Gold, similarly. I mean, with gold's open interest at around about 400,000 ounces, that again shows, a lack of speculative interest. I mean, there's lots and lots of talk about speculative interest and how, the retail industry sort of bought it and they're being shaken out and so on. Actually, obviously there's no pure argument in this, but the evidence from the Far East, which is really where the retail demand is that on this drop, the retail interest is being maintained. I mean, they're saying, whoopee, it's cheaper to buy gold, go and buy some, or silver. What it is, I think the best way to explain it is that the paper market has now become completely divorced from the underlying price and value, if you like, of bullion. And since nobody is really in there challenging it, you can make what you like. You can call silver 120, 60, I don't know, anything you like. Because there's nobody in there actually saying, "I've got to buy this." I mean, they've marked it down, it's so cheap and all the rest of it. So that's the basic answer. I think there is another answer too, and that is that we're coming up to the first quarter, March 31st, and The bullion banks have a problem. Just like you and I and the viewers of this video, they can see that financial markets are getting more and more risky, and gold and silver less so. But they don't have any. And not only that, but if you think about the big banks in America, they've all been saying, for very good reason, we expect gold to go to $6,000, $6,500, whatever, whatever. You've even got, I think it was Morgan Stanley saying, it's no longer 60-40, it's 60-20-20.
Right.
But what people don't realize is that these banks in their managed accounts, and it's not unusual to see a major American bank managing $1 trillion of other people's money. They haven't got any gold in there at all, or none to speak of. They are embarrassed by this. They're short, and they can see that they themselves are going to have to buy this, but there's none around. So that means that the outlook is for a massive continuing squeeze, basically, as particularly the silver contract, the silver futures contract, becomes not good for purpose. I mean, do you really want to be market making in a silver contract when you can't get the underlying physical?
Can't get delivering, yeah.
I mean, this the problem first hit London, but you can see why it is that they basically want to bash it, because they want to shake out those few people, maybe even persuade a few hedge funds to go short, because you can put forward an argument. You can say, we got inflation down the road, so we're not going to get a reduction in interest rates. Interest rates could well go up. That makes it more expensive to hold gold and silver, so they should go down. This is the Keynesian argument, in effect, well, the macroeconomic argument, which we had thrown at us for years and years and years, in complete defiance of actually what happened. I think that's the basic answer. Now, how this shortage developed, and why it is still with us. I mean, there's still backwardations in silver, despite the fact the price has fallen from paper 120 down to a paper 60 odd, 60, what did it hit? 61, 62 yesterday. Oh, and incidentally, one thing that's interesting is on the sell-off yesterday, if you look at the volume figures on COMEX, they're through the roof. In other words, this is a classic technical bottom where, you get that sort of real, you got a mixture of people sort of throwing up in fear and buyers getting in there and buying. That is the classic sell-off climax. We've seen that in the technical sense. Now, given that what we're really talking about is trying to get prices down so that the options expire worthless. And there are quite a lot of options expiring worthless on this at a lower price, then you can see there's huge incentive for the market makers, the bullion bank traders, whatever, whatever, to try and suppress it. So that's all we're seeing, really. I mean, what a wonderful opportunity for stackers.
No, I thought about that, especially your last point. I thought they got to get it down just for all these options. I mean, this is triple witching Friday, correct? Or it just Yeah. So they got to push it down. I can't tell you. I used to be a big futures trader and also had a hedge fund, and that's we'd see all the time in other instruments and other assets. Just hey, they got to get this down or they got to get it up. Sometimes the reverse was true just because of where all the options were written. So I think that's part of it. We have an interesting, you brought up two other things too. You brought up the inflation rate. And you brought up interest rates. Let's work that out a little bit more. Now there's a new dynamic with, and I laugh not because of I'm gleeful of the war and the quandary that we're in, but I laugh just because it's just another layer to this craziness that we're looking at. It's that's this inflationary problem. That's what oil brings. So we go to war 3 weeks ago or 3.5, 4 weeks ago. And oil's at, I'm saying the quote in US dollars, but it's around $100 a barrel, or between 90 and let's say just over $100 a barrel. That's going to be a massive wave of inflation, and for all the reports that they want down, correct me if I'm wrong and talk to me about that.
I mean, by my analysis, commodity prices were very, very cheap in real terms. Now, by real terms, I mean measured in gold, because that is real money. The rest of it's fiat rubbish. Okay. So when we price things in dollars, it's make pretend. But if you price it in gold, you'll see that most commodities or baskets of commodities are approximately 25% where they should be in terms of long-term value. Only 25%. So, if you and energy was is about the same. I mean, oil is about the same. So these commodities have become very, very underpriced, I would say, because of the distortion of accounting in fiat currencies, and particularly fiat dollars. That's really why it has gone adrift, if you like, from reality. So, if you looked at that the other way around, you could say that, well, in real terms, given that the purchasing power of gold is fairly level throughout, long periods of time, what you could say is that the value of these commodities should rise roughly 300% to get back to normal. And that doesn't assume any overshoot. Now, of course, we don't know that it'll get back to normal quite that way. But if you put on top of that a depreciating purchasing power for the currencies, then your base case has got to be at least 300% increase. And depending how you feel about the dollar, it could be significantly more. So what this war has done actually is acted as a catalyst to hurry up something that was already in the works. And I think that's the key point, because you've got people running around saying, well, it's gold, it's not gold, oil has gone up to $100, might go to 120, might go to 150, whatever. I mean, they miss this point. Do not be surprised if by the end of this year you see the oil price far, far higher. I mean, depending what happens to the dollar, I think that is actually an extremely important point, because what we're going to see is we are going to see widespread inflation at the consumer price level because of this commodity effect. And it's not just oil either. I mean, the Middle East, because it cracks oil down into petrochemicals and all the rest of it, it's a big source of fertilizers, big source of urea, big source of sulfur, which goes into the sort of potassium thingies, sort of potassium fertilizers and all the rest of it. And things like helium, which are vital for the for making chips, and also apparently vital for all sorts of things you'd never think it was vital for. I mean, someone said that fiber optic cables can't exist without helium. Well, it was new to me, but it would, I mean, someone else made the point, and this was a professor who specialized in petrochemicals and all the rest of it. He said that he tells his students, I think it was in the University of London, or one of those, that there are 45,000 consumer products which depend on the oil price. And or derivatives of oil or whatever. I mean, so this what this means actually is that the inflation rate, which nobody was really looking for, is going to be through the roof later on this year. Okay, what does that do to bond yields? Well, they could be through the roof as well. So that's what's going on. And I mean, I can just imagine that on Monday morning at 6 o'clock in the morning, they were shaking Trump awake, saying, "Taco, for God's sake, taco." Besant saying, saying, "Look, this is going to screw up my debt management program," because all these bonds, I mean, they suddenly saw the whole thing. There's no way you should get any cuts in interest rates. Having said that, Powell leaves in May. And if Trump has his way, he would have interest rates at zero. And indeed, forcing interest rates down could be about his only salvation ahead of the midterms because everything else is going horribly wrong for him.
Yeah. Do you think that's really inevitable? Go ahead, go ahead.
If he does that, he's just going to screw up the dollar even more.
Yeah.
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 So I
Well, do
think
you
I've
see
answered the
it as
question.
inevitable, like them pushing down interest rates or doing everything they can to push down interest rates? It seems like that's almost like, and that is not a solution. I'm not advocating for that by any means, but it seems like that's the only card that they have to play before the midterms.
It could well be, but the pro I mean, I think it's probably even more serious than that, actually. I mean, for me to suggest that it's his only salvation for the midterms is a bit flippant, let's face it. The problem that Powell and his successor really has is that when you get rising bond yields, and let's say the 10-year goes through 5%, that's going to crash the equity market. You crash the equity market, then according to the Fed's playbook, confidence in the underlying economy takes a very, very bad knock. You need to have a good stock market to have confidence in the economy. So what do they do? He's got a choice. Either he protects the dollar by raising interest rates and having to rescue banks, seeing zombie companies who loaded up on very, very cheap debt during the years in the run up to the COVID crisis and through 2020, who are now, I mean, having sort of maybe borrowed 2, 3, 4, 5 year money at less than 1%, if you're a sort of prime borrower, you're now looking at refinancing at, well, I mean, could it be 5 or 6%? I mean, basically, if you're overloaded with debt and you've leveraged up your earnings, this is a disaster. And this is, of course, where the private equity industry is really hung out to dry by all this. And also, real estate and all the rest of it. So what does he do? I mean, does he just stand back and protect the dollar and say that, we've got to protect the dollar, that's more important? Or does he do the opposite and take whatever action is necessary along with the US Treasury? In order to rescue the economy? Well, I think the answer is the latter. That's the mandate. That's his mandate. And, to hell with the inflationary consequences. In other words, either, I mean, you're going to find that the value of credit or the other side of credit, debt, is going to get wiped out. It either gets wiped out by businesses and banks going bust, or it gets wiped out by the if you like the currency in which you value this debt being depreciated right down to whatever is necessary, and that's going to be the choice. And I'm absolutely clear in my own mind, it is the political imperative which will win, and that is sacrifice the dollar, don't sacrifice businesses.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. I think that's what's going to happen. And that's just my speculation, but I couldn't agree more. But let's game that out. What does exactly that look like over the next, let's give it 12 months, 6 to 12 months. What
I'm
does that
sorry, I missed the important word in that question. What's the outlook for the next, what is it we're looking at?
Yeah, in the next 6 to 12 months, let's say they go and rescue the equity markets, they go and rescue private banks, or just, I mean, yeah, what is that?
Well,
Let's get that out.
what you're going to get is you're going to get QE like you've never seen before, and it'll be cash for cash.
Right? I'm not laughing at you, but
No,
I'm agreeing. I'm
but
laughing
it'll
out
be
of
cash.
fear. I'm laughing out of fear. Oh, God.
You and I both, but it'll be cash for cash. I mean, it'll be sort of pushing out short-term debt because the long-term debt is in a debt trap. I mean, they won't be able to fund anything with any real maturity. So it's going to be sort of 1 month, 3 month, 6 month T-bills on one side of the Fed's balance sheet and cash going out the door on the other. That's what it'll be, or not cash, but it'll be bank reserves, if you like, and that's how the accounting works on that. So, and that'll just go straight into the economy, rescue this, rescue that, But it'll all be short-term cash. And if it's cash for cash, effectively, it's just cash printing, really. This is exactly what happened in Germany between 1920 and 1923. And, I mean, the thing that's fascinating, Andy, is that if you study that period, you see that actually they knew what they were doing. They had a grasp of classical economics, not this pretend macroeconomics, which was only invented in 36 by Keynes. They actually knew what they were doing. They knew what the consequences were. Despite that, the political imperative was print, 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 and that's what they had to do. I mean, I know it's different circumstances, and you could argue, well, the big reparations and when France walked into the Ruhr and all this sort of stuff. But, it's the political imperative. That's the key thing to understand that in this sort of crisis, it's always politics that drives it, not economics, not logic, not common sense even. So that's, I'm afraid it's the end of the fiat currency system, in effect.
Well, you say the end of the fiat currency system, then what? And I think I know what you're going to say, but I want you to answer that anyway. Then is this a revert back to hard assets or gold as the system?
Well, I think you have to understand what the difference is between money and credit. And it was actually said by John Pierpont Morgan in 1912 to Congress. He said, gold is money and all else is credit. And it is. I mean, the way you identify credit as opposed to final settlement is there an obligation on the other side of someone's balance sheet to deliver whatever it is to you? So, you have a credit, you own, let us say, a bank deposit. In the bank, they have you as a liability and they have an asset on the other side. But for the bank, you are a liability. Yeah. It's not your money, they owe it to you. So that's clearly credit. If you look at, a dollar bill and look at the Fed's balance sheet, you will see that that appears on the liability side of their balance sheet. In other words, they owe it to you. So all that is credit. Currency is credit. It's not money, if you like, in that strict legal sense. What we're going to see is credit being demolished in terms of its value. And there's no alternative. There really isn't. When that happens, basically, the value of credit goes to zero. Goes towards zero unless someone actually stops it. The only way really to stop it is to go onto a gold standard. In other words, what you do is you tie the value of credit to real money, which is final settlement, physical gold coins, if you like, or gold bars, or gold in whatever form. That's final settlement, which is why the central banks around the world, apart from the US Central Bank and also the Europeans, who are all yes men really to the Fed. This is why all the other central banks are accumulating gold because they don't want everybody else's currency liabilities. It's all, they've got reserves which are full of other people's liabilities. They want out and to have real money there. I mean, that's a signal we should actually pay very, very close attention to.
Yeah, absolutely. And it looks like we have been or started to pay attention, if you would. When I say we, retail normal people with the accumulation over the last several months, and we just see this as a, which I see it as this downturn as another opportunity to buy more. Alistair, I've taken way too much of your time, but I just want first I want to say thank you. Then, if people want to read more about you, if they want to do business with you, you've done a great job just with your blog on. I think it's on Substack that I read, just educating people like myself. If people want to find out more about you, how do they go that? Where should we direct them to?
McLeodFinance.com. It's my Substack, and I'm trying to make as many people as possible aware of what's happening to their wealth. It is being devalued, if you like, and it's potentially being devalued to nothing, unless you actually have that final settlement as part of your wealth makeup, and that's gold, silver, maybe. That's a slightly different story. I mean, there are other things you can hold. But I think the point is that I'm trying to educate people as to exactly what's going on. Don't buy the government Kool-Aid. You'll lose everything if you do that. The more subscribers, the better.
Yeah, I'll keep on pointing, doing my part and pointing people towards you and keep on fighting the good
Thank you.
fight. We need more people like you to tell the story and just to educate people so they can become their own sovereign, if you would, become their own
Yeah.
boss. So
Yeah.
that's my goal. Thank you so much, Alistair. Look forward to having you on next time.
Thank you very much, Andy.
Absolutely. And to all my viewers and listeners, I'll link to everything in the show notes, both on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Have you on again soon.
Thank you.